It's been way too long, and I really miss you. Love you, buddy. I'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Top fives and deep dives. What's out of PTM? Top fives and deep dives. What's out of PTM? Top fives and deep dives. What's out of PTM? Top fives and deep dives. What's out of PTM?
My favorite director would have to be Martin Scorsese, followed by...
Hey guys, welcome to Top Fives and Deep Dives. This is Justin over here in LA. We've got Mike across the pond over in London. What's up, my friend?
Yo.
It's been a minute.
It has been a minute.
Summer 2023. What the fuck? We started this podcast in 2020?
We did?
That's nuts.
Fuck, man. That is crazy.
3 years pretty much since we really started planning it out and starting to record some episodes. I know we released the first one. I think it might have been September of 2020, but just nuts, man. Just nuts.
I know I'm not the only person to say this, but COVID has really fucked with time. I have no idea. Like, things are both farther away and closer than they appear.
Yes, I agree. So it's just bizarre, but I'm so happy that we're back on. I hope that's our longest break that we'll ever have.
Yeah, I hope so too. It has been, I don't even know how long it's been. Too long.
Me either. But this, in terms of official episodes, I know there's been bonus eps, there's been, you know, random episodes here and there, but official episodes, I believe this is episode 93. So we're closing in on 100.
Ooh, that's tantalizing. We have to figure out exactly what we're going to do for that.
I know. That's going to have to be a special one. But the reason we're here today, there's a certain movie that by the time you're all listening to this has just come out. But at the time we're recording, comes out in just a few days. And that is Indiana Jones 5, Indiana Jones and the Dial of Destiny. And so this episode, we're doing our top five Harrison Ford films.
This is going to be a ride. I think my feelings about some of Harrison Ford's most famous films or film franchises are well known to listeners of the pod. So this is going to be fun.
There's going to be some classic Mike hot takes. There's going to be some, I'm sure, some deep cuts by Mike and stuff that we're all going to want to watch. I will probably positively talk about a couple said franchises, but we're really excited to talk Harrison Ford. I mean, just an absolute legend. But before we do, so we obviously have not gotten to see Dial of Destiny yet, as it's not out at this moment, but we both did see a certain film this past weekend. And we need to talk about it. So that's going to be our spotlight for the week, is going to be No Hard Feelings, the Jennifer Lawrence R-rated raunchy comedy, rom-com, whatever you want to call it. And Mike, do you mind if I just kick us off?
Please.
I cannot tell you how much joy it brought me to watch an R-rated sex comedy in the movie theater again.
Dude, it's unreal. Honestly, even like, yes, sex comedy, but even just regular comedy, I don't think I've really laughed in a movie since Jackass 4, which was probably like 2 years ago at this point.
Yes, I agree. And that, again, that moment felt like a special moment that we haven't had in a long time.
Yeah.
It's just, we don't get enough of these comedies that are, you know.
We don't get any.
And, you know, even the ones, they do try to make some maybe for the streamers occasionally.
Yeah.
But not okay. Cinema. Yeah, not in the cinema.
And not with fucking Jennifer Lawrence.
No. And I just want to start by saying my hat goes off to her, because for an actress as big as her in this day and age to agree to do an R-rated comedy is kind of unheard of, again, at this stage of the game.
Total badass.
So, total badass. We love her, and she's absolutely great in this. If you have no idea what the movie's about, it's about Jennifer Lawrence playing, you know, a young 30s gal who lives in Montauk, and you know, all the rich New Yorkers come there, of course, to vacation for the summer. You know, it's like in the Hamptons. So, which I've never been to the Hamptons. Have you, Mike?
No, of course not.
Well, whenever I talk about it, I'm always like so unsure because I'm like, I haven't actually been there, so I don't really know what I'm talking
about. I've been to Hamden. Shout out to the space.
Shout out.
Shout out to Dixwell Avenue.
Big Connecticut shout out right now. Oh, not the fancy Hamptons in New York, though. And so Jennifer Lawrence is one of the townies that lives there year round. She's trying to keep her house. She's on the brink of losing it. It was her mother's. Her mother is at this point passed away, and she's really trying to make ends meet any way she can. But she needs to drive Uber to be able to supplement her income, and she loses her car. Cut to her seeing an intriguing job listing where some, you know, rich New Yorker parents are looking for a girl to bring their 19-year-old son, kind of get him out of his shell before college, or just fuck him before college. So this is going to be her way to get a car, because they're going to give her a car if she's able to do this. And just all the hijinks happen from there. And it is, I had a fucking blast, man.
Dude, I agree. I mean, I thought it was really solid. I mean, even like you're saying, even if it was bad, I still would have really enjoyed it, because it's just such a unique experience now to get to see this type of movie. But it was better than I thought. It was a lot smarter than I thought, to be honest. I think it's a well-made film. And like you said, Jennifer Lawrence is a badass for doing this.
Yep. Absolute badass. Again, like, if I'm stacking it up, I'm trying to keep everyone's expectations in check. If I'm stacking it up against the classic comedies of kind of at least Mike and Mai's heyday, where you had, you know, all the Apatow films and, you know, all the Will Ferrell films and fucking the Sandler films of the 90s. I'm not like even necessarily trying to say this is an instant classic, but I mean, this could have come out right alongside all of them. It's a great, great time in the theater.
Agreed.
Highly recommend you guys check it out. Let's bring these type of movies back to the theater. I've literally been telling everyone I know. I go see it. Go see it. It's just so good to have a comedy like this back in the theaters. No hard feelings. Check it out. Anyways, to get to the reason we're really here, the one and only Harrison Ford. I mean, absolute legend. Man is in his 80s and he is still crushing it today.
With computer assistance.
With computer assistance in Indy 5. But I mean, even look at this man working right now. He's in TV on Shrinking on Apple, which is amazing if you guys haven't watched it. Absolutely amazing show with him and Jason Segel and a great cast of characters. And he's also in 1923, which is, you know, set within the Yellowstone, the Yellowstone world, and is one of the prequels there. It's just the guy is, he's still crushing.
Still crushing, and yet, I think that all of my movies are like within a decade of each other. I'm scrolling now. It can't be much more than that.
Mine are over a little healthier of a time frame, but I will say, well, you know what? I just don't want to give things away. But mine are in a little bit of a set time frame as well. But I've made it more than a decade.
Mine are actually 7 years. It's not even a decade.
I am just dying because I just have so many ideas of what you may have picked. Well, I think we just need to jump into it because he has so many films, so much we can talk about. Kick us off, man. Number 5, Mike Faiella's top 5 Harrison Ford movies.
Okay.
Let's go.
Here we go. All right. Number 5. So my number one through four, I felt like really strongly about. And this one I was kind of torn between, like, do I pick a film that I don't like quite as much, but I think the Harrison Ford performance is really good and there's a lot, like, he's the lead character? Or do I go with something where, like, he's maybe not as big of a part, but I think the film is better? And I decided to do the first one. So okay. I'm going with what I think is, like, one of his best performances in a film, 1986, The Mosquito Coast.
Amazing.
Okay, Mosquito Coast. Have you seen this?
Sadly, no. On the list that I didn't get to, which is why I love you, because I know I'm getting these cuts.
All right, here's Mosquito Coast. So directed by Peter Weir. So you're in good hands. Truman Show, Master and Commander, Dead Poets Society. Also directed Witness, which was the film before starring Harrison Ford.
Oh, yeah.
We'll get there. We'll get there. Written by Paul Schrader. Adapted from a book by Paul Theroux, who's like a travel writer, fiction and nonfiction. A lot of Pauls. So Harrison Ford is kind of like this, I don't know, he almost is like maybe like Unabomber-y, like in a sense. Like, he has a family, but he's like, he hates society and he hates like progress and people don't appreciate like his wacky inventions and stuff. And he's like a real character, kind of like a conservative jerk, but also like kind of just a character. And he picks up his family, which includes Helen Mirren as his wife and River Phoenix as his kid. And they go and move into like the jungles somewhere in, like, I think it was filmed in Belize. I don't know if they specifically say where it was set, but like, let's call it Belize. And they're going to like start their own little, like, whatever. They're going to live off the land. They're going to like build something. And at first you're kind of like, oh man, is this going to be like a, like one of those guys that goes to like North Sentinel Island and gets murdered immediately by like uncontacted tribes? But no, there's like a small society there, and like Harrison Ford's really smart and he like knows how to build shit. And so they're like, this is actually pretty dope. Like, this guy's here. He makes like, his whole thing is that he makes this gigantic like ice machine in the middle of the jungle. And they're like, what the fuck is this? This guy's a genius. But, and that's like 45 minutes of the film. And you're like, all right, this is great. But then Harrison Ford, like, he simply can't be satisfied. Like, then the people like sort of take the ice for granted in his mind, and now like, oh, these people like aren't pure anymore either. And so he like tries to go to an even more uncontacted tribe and like almost gets murdered, and then like stuff kind of goes from there. And it's just like a, it's really interesting like character study. Like, I think for me, maybe the most interesting non-Harrison Ford-y character he's ever played. Mm-hmm. And it's just like this guy that's, you know, just very proud, greedy, like narcissistic. And he has his family, and there's kind of a family drama. And I think it maybe doesn't fully cash in on the premise, but there is now like a 2-season TV show of Mosquito Coast that I'm like interested in watching, because there's a lot that could be done with this world that maybe doesn't fully work in the like second half of this film. But yeah, mm-hmm. really interesting performance, and the movie is solid overall. So I would check it out.
I would like to. There's honestly still a handful of Mr. Harrison's films that I need to watch, and it might happen tonight.
Also, Paul Theroux, good writer. I've read 2 of his books this year, and I'm excited to read more. So okay. Yeah. All right. Let's see what you got. Number 5.
Mosquito Coast. My number 5. You know, I'm giving a big nod to my fiance Alex, who many of you listening
all right, okay,
have heard on the pod before.
That should be enough for everybody who listens to know what this could be.
Yes. One of her favorite movies, which now we've watched a handful of times together. And, you know, I decided to include on the list because it's honestly a very different role than Harrison Ford typically takes. He typically, and honestly, Mike, speaking similarly to what you were just saying about Mosquito Coast and kind of different roles for him, this role is also outside of what I would consider the typical Ford role, is action or action adjacent. And this is anything but. And this is 1988's Working Girl.
Had to be with an intro like that.
Had to be. So look, in this movie, and Harrison Ford, even though he is top billed in this because of, you know, the way things were back then, he's not really the main character, but he's probably the biggest supporting character. So in Working Girl, we got a great cast. It's Harrison Ford. We have Melanie Griffith plays the lead, Sigourney Weaver, Alec Baldwin's in it, Joan Cusack.
Oh, dude, Joan Cusack is so fucking good in this movie.
She's so, honestly, one of, if we were talking about Joan Cusack roles, this is one of my favorites of her.
And you have to just say, in just another example of We All Should Have Known, Kevin Spacey's in this movie for about 1 minute and is the biggest sleazebag ever.
And we should have known. You know who's also in this movie for a hot second?
Oliver Platt?
Yes, who I love, but you know who else?
No.
Fucking David Duchovny.
Oh, yes, 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 yes. You're right. You're right.
So pretty stacked. Anyways, it's actually pretty awesome that this came out in the late 80s, because I'd say it's a pretty like feminine forward film. And it follows, you know, takes place in New York City. Melanie Griffith plays this receptionist Tess at kind of a big business type company. And her boss is Sigourney Weaver, who, you know, Tess ends up giving her kind of like a really good, we'll say like a good business tip. And Sigourney Weaver's character just, you know, steals the idea, doesn't give her credit. But then Sigourney Weaver winds up in the hospital after a skiing accident. And so Tess decides she's going to pretend to be Sigourney Weaver's character, Catherine, and start up a deal with Harrison Ford's character, who's an investment broker. And that's where the plot kind of takes off. But it's just a really, I mean, it's totally an 80s movie. It's a classic 80s rom-com, but it's pretty freaking smart with that said. And I feel like Harrison Ford, again, if you look at all the movies, and Mike, I feel like you'd kind of agree with me here. If you look at all the other movies he's making in that decade, they're pretty much all action movies. So to get him, I mean, there's one or two that are not, but to get him in this where he's just kind of this businessman in New York, it's like, it was just a breath of fresh air for me. And I think it's just such a fun movie. I just had to include it. I knew it wasn't going to get its due otherwise. And I feel like people are less aware of this movie compared to maybe some other 80s rom-coms. I think this one's worth taking a watch.
Yeah, this isn't that far from my list, to be honest. I think it's a movie, like you said, it's kind of that late 80s, like women in the workplace type of thing. But this one is, you know, it's not really forced. It feels like it could almost happen. And it's also not like overly sweet. Like Melanie Griffith gives a really interesting performance. And from the Harrison Ford perspective, I feel like also he plays someone that's like kind of fragile. Like he's not doing well in the business. And that sort of is part of why he's jumping on this whole thing in the first place, and it plays to his character, and they have good chemistry with each other. I like it. Yeah, I like it quite a bit. No issue with me.
I love it. I can't wait till we have issues later.
Yeah, we definitely will. but probably not at my number four. I don't think there could be issues with this.
Okay.
My number four is part of like a little bit of an interesting time for action movies in the 90s, because it's part of like a strange trilogy, which I will explain. So mine is 1992's Patriot Games.
Oh, yes. Yes.
So this is part of this Jack Ryan trilogy.
Yep.
Where Harrison Ford plays in two movies. This one and then Clear and Present Danger follows. But the one before is Hunt for Red October, which slaps. But Alec Baldwin is Jack Ryan in that movie. But then some of the other characters stay the same between the trilogy, like James Earl Jones. So anyway, it's a little bit of a weird time. This one is, so Harrison Ford plays Jack Ryan, and at this point he's already like retired from the CIA. But then he's like in London, and he like witnesses the IRA trying to like kill this, it's like a fake person, but it's, you know, someone in like the British royal family, and he like intervenes, and he ends up like stopping them from killing this guy, and he also kills one of these IRA guys. So there's like this like political thriller aspect to it, but then also the IRA is like set on killing Harrison Ford and his family. Also, Samuel L. Jackson shows up like at the very end of the movie, which is awesome. But and Harrison Ford just sort of goes on a rampage and is like trying to kill these guys back. But he also has like the entire government on him, which is pretty cool. And it's like, yeah, so you get the revenge aspect, which I think is what really works, and gives him a lot of like very angry, like powerful lines, which I think are great. I'm generally, as you know, like a fan of kind of movies involving random history in Ireland. I'm not saying this one represents anything that actually happened, but I'm pretty much all in for just IRA type stuff. And I have to say, this movie will eventually, because I like Clear and Present Danger as well, but what ended up getting this one, let's say, over the sequel in this spot is that this has my favorite Harrison Ford line in the history of film.
Oh my, tell me.
So, at one point, Harrison Ford has rerouted American satellites, which they say can't be done, but he's like, fuck it, I'm Harrison Ford, I don't care. And he reroutes these satellites to where the IRA is camping out in Libya for whatever reason, which actually, like, in California is where they filmed it. And they, it's like satellite photos. So obviously they can't like identify which one of these random groups of people in Libya is the IRA, right? But a key aspect of all this is that this English woman, who is played by Polly Walker, works for the IRA. And so at one point they finally zoom in and Harrison Ford is like, I know that's them. And someone's like, why? And he just like zooms in on this woman and is like, tits. And that's the entire line. It's just, and then they proceed to like blow up this entire group of people in Libya, which is like maybe not cool. But wow, what a just silly moment. Also directed by Philip Noyce, the Australian guy who directed Dead Calm. Shout out to Nicole Kidman.
Wow. Wow. Big shout out to Nicole.
Brought it home.
Dude, Patriot Games was probably my next movie on the list. Just missed my list. I think it's great.
So fun.
Yeah, so fun. I think I enjoy it just a little bit more than Clear and Present Danger, although I think they're both solid movies.
Yep, totally.
And yeah, I mean, he's to me the superior Jack Ryan.
Yeah, definitely. But Hunt for Red October is awesome, but like,
agreed.
Alec Baldwin's also like, it's much more about Sean Connery on the sub than Alec Baldwin sort of like chasing down the sub, yes, kind of thing for me.
And he's just, I don't know, Harrison Ford just, for whatever reason, he looks kind of like who I'd envision.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that.
And maybe I'm a little biased because he's who I first saw in the role, but he just, I don't know. He has that feel to him.
Yeah, I agree. I agree totally. And again, in this one, he's already like retired and he like comes out of retirement to do so like they're playing to his age as well, which I think
that's
great.
True.
And I think is one of the issues with like this aging down that we're doing now. I'm not saying like I hate it because it gives us more Indiana Jones movies, which is a cool concept. But at the same time, like I like when actors are able to play off their age.
I agree with that. And I have completely lost my train of thought and don't know where I was going with that.
I take that's on me.
But it's all to say, oh, this is where I was going with this. Something that we haven't touched on yet with Harrison Ford, he is one of only a few, I think, actors that are as big as him that really didn't become a superstar until he was like a little bit older, at least in Hollywood terms.
When does he become a star in Hollywood terms?
I'd say he becomes a star when Star Wars comes out.
Yeah.
You disagree with that?
No. Yeah, for sure.
And
so how old is he when Star Wars came out?
So when Star Wars came out, he was 35 years old.
Oh, right. Yeah, okay.
Which, that's not old, but most of these guys that became the A-listers, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong off the top of your head, but a lot of them rose to prominence either in their later teens or their 20s. And I think it's really interesting that he breaks out when he's halfway to 40.
Yeah, and in Star Wars, he's already kind of grumpy, right? He's never played a young person.
No. I mean, he was in, what year did it come out?
I mean, he was in American Graffiti, right?
That's what I was thinking of.
But he's not really the star of that movie by any stretch.
No. And even in that movie, when he filmed it, he was, I think he was 30 when he filmed it. It came out when he was either 30 or 31. So even so, it's like, it's a bit of a later career start. And I'd say his biggest era was when he was in his later 30s and 40s, going in all the way through into maybe even his 50s.
Well, yeah. I mean, you can already tell by when my films are out that I think he does his best work, yeah, in his like late 40s, 50s, I guess.
Yeah. And it's just, I mean, it's a pretty, to a degree, a pretty fascinating career to me. But Patriot Games is fucking great. And well, I'm sure we'll continue on this train. But should I bring us to my number four?
Let's do it.
Okay. So for my number four, my guess is that this is going to be the newest film on either of our lists.
Mm.
This is the only movie on the lists that breaks into the 21st century, baby. Year 2000. What Lies Beneath?
Okay, sure.
Some of this definitely goes down to childhood nostalgia. But with that said, I think this is a really solid kind of thriller. It's directed by Robert Zemeckis, who, of course, we had Back to the Future. He did Contact, Flight more recently, of course, Forrest Gump. But he goes none of those movies are like this movie. He goes more the thriller route with this. And he's got Harrison Ford and Michelle Pfeiffer in the lead roles. And I think this is a really interesting movie. So it's pretty much about Harrison Ford. Have you watched this recently, Mike?
I have, yeah.
Honestly, for me, it's been a little bit. So if you want to help me out at all here, feel free. But in my recollection, Harrison Ford plays like a scientist at like a college, I think.
Yeah, and he's working in like a research position.
Yeah, he's like a research scientist.
Yeah.
And his wife is Claire, who's Michelle Pfeiffer. She's retired. A year prior, she was in like a serious car accident, and they just sent their daughter off, or I'd say her daughter, his stepdaughter, to college. And with this, Claire, very gradually, it's like she starts to hear voices, witness kind of eerie occurrences, and there's this face of this young woman that is reflecting in the water. And so, I mean, do I give away any more than that, Mike?
Probably not. I don't think you have to.
I think that's kind of, we'll say that's generally where it starts, but it takes some turns from there. And it's just, I think it's a really solid, like, psychological thriller.
Yeah, the only thing I'll add is that, like, what kind of kicks everything off is that she feels like she witnesses, like, a murder across the street. So it's, like, that sort of woman in the window type vibe. Like,
yes, yes, yes.
Gaslight, okay. Like, sort of situation. I feel like with this movie, like, the third act is really solid. And it's shot, like, much better than the rest of the film. And there is a weird turn. Like, the major turn in this happens, like, halfway through instead of, like, towards the end, which is cool. But otherwise, it's sort of like, I don't know. It's a bit like maybe paint by numbers. Like, it's sturdy. There's nothing wrong with it. I'm not saying it's not like a film that I enjoy or a film that I would watch. But it's more like I'm happy when it's like I come across a TV or it's like in the background rather than like it holds my attention for 2 hours.
I wouldn't disagree. But I will say that I do think it's a little paint by numbers because after this movie, like, I don't know. I don't think before this film, there was a ton of movies like this. I feel like in the 10 to 15 years following, they made a lot of kind of psychological thrillers and whatnot. And I think it makes this even more paint by numbers than it may even seem at the outset in hindsight.
I think that's part of it. And it's definitely a part of it today, like even more so because the movie sort of veers paranormal at times, and there's a lot of movies like that now.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, he's good in it, and he plays, without giving anything away, he again plays a little bit off type, plays into his type only to play off type at the turn.
Yes.
And yeah, I like Michelle Pfeiffer quite a bit, and she's good. And also, if I can just bang this drum one more time, watching a lot of these movies makes you just remember just how unafraid filmmakers were of sex at a certain time, where now, again, there's just no sex in films. Like, there's a scene like 5 minutes into this where for no reason the new neighbors are just like fucking incredibly loudly. Mm-hmm. And Michelle Pfeiffer and Harrison Ford are like, no. So Harrison Ford goes to close the window and Michelle Pfeiffer's like, no, leave it open. Like, let's try to compete with these people by fucking. And it's a cool little moment, but like that just doesn't happen in mainstream films. You know what I mean? No. Like, just a casual reference, even just saying fuck, like, barely ever happens anymore. So, love Michelle Pfeiffer.
Love Michelle. She's honestly a gem.
She really is.
Sometimes gets forgotten about, and I don't like that. I don't like it either,
especially, I mean, the Catwoman is just, it's next level.
Come on.
It's next level.
Come on. That's number four for me, What Lies Beneath.
Okay. All right. I like it. Number three for me, we have to do what we always do every time we talk about this person. Roman Polanski, not a good dude. Good filmmaker, not a good dude. Yep. Especially on this movie, because he ends up marrying like the star of this film that's not Harrison Ford, and she's like 22. It's not cool. Don't like it. They're still married today, though. But anyway, not a cool dude. Number three, 1988's Frantic.
Okay, so Mike, wow. I'm so excited to hear you talk about this movie. So I made, in researching for this episode, so just for everyone out there, when we do these episodes, especially the ones where we're talking about a specific actor, method to my madness, I literally make a list of every single movie that they've been in. And then I go through what they're all about for the ones I haven't seen. I try to get through all of them. Inevitably, sometimes I'm not able to get to every single one. Frantic is one that I literally have 5 exclamation points next to, because I was so intrigued by the premise. Didn't get to it. Very excited to see that it's on the list.
Okay. Frantic. Harrison Ford is he's a doctor again. He's like a doctor. And he arrives in Paris with his wife. Very, very, very little setup to this film. It's just right away, like, they're in a taxi on the way to the airport, to the hotel in Paris. And the less you know about this film, the better, so I won't ruin too much. But they're like, they get like room service, they unpack their bags, they do like whatever in the hotel. Harrison Ford goes to take a shower, and the camera is in the shower with Harrison Ford. Sadly, not on his penis. I just mean, like, it's literally in the
and
shower.
And I thought you were starting this by about to say Harrison Ford goes into the bathroom to take a shit.
No.
Instead, we're talking about showers, penises. I love it.
So the camera's in the shower, so he can't hear what's happening in the room, and you can't hear it either, and you can only see it through, like, the, frosted glass door of the shower. And so you get the vibe that his wife gets a phone call, and she tries to say something to him, presumably about who's on the phone, and he's like, I can't hear you, I'm in the shower. And then she, like, walks out of frame, and then he eventually gets out of the shower, and she's gone.
Damn.
Nowhere to be seen.
Damn. And that's where it kicks off into high gear.
And that's where it kicks off. And he has to go find his wife in Paris. And there's a lot of, like, this is all shot on location in Paris, which is great. It really uses, like, I think both culturally the French as well as the location of Paris, which is interesting. And it has aspects of, like, I feel like, what's that movie? Jesus Christ. Stillwater is kind of like this, where it's like he's running into like French bureaucracy and he's trying to find his wife, but he's doing his Harrison Ford thing and he's like, fuck you guys, I'm going to get my wife. You know what I mean? That sort of vibe.
Yeah.
But it unravels this whole mystery. And it's very like, there's kind of like mistaken identity. Like, it's very Hitchcockian in that way. And then eventually he meets Emmanuelle Seigner, who is a great actress, then married Roman Polanski after this film, and brings him into this like sort of underworld of Paris. But it's just a really, really cool, like, mystery, kind of neo-noir, thrillery type film, all set in Paris. Super awesome.
I love the sound of this movie.
The first pick. 40 minutes especially are fucking spectacular. You're going to love it.
Okay. I cannot wait. Sounds like a great number three. And I'm going to take us just a few years later for this next one. I'm going to take us to 1997. And I just had to do it. Air Force One.
Oh, wow. Okay, yeah.
Actually, the last movie I just watched before we hopped on here. And what a time. What a time.
What a time. It's exactly what you're saying about this movie.
Harrison Ford as the president, President James Marshall. We've got Gary Oldman as the villain. We got Glenn Close in there as the vice president. We've got a young William H. Macy. I've got to shout out Xander Berkeley because 24. But this is just, I mean, to an extent, it's just another version of Die Hard on a plane. So it's kind of, you know, kind of like Die Hard 2, but different with that said. So to give you the gist of what happens, Harrison, he's the president. He is getting on, you know, to Air Force One for a flight. And Gary Oldman and his group of radicals, they hijack the plane. And the president and his family are on board. So things get crazy from there. And Harrison Ford, with this said, he has a military background. So he's kind of a fucking badass president, and he takes things into his own hands. And it's just, I mean, Mike, you know me. You know that I'm a sucker for an action movie. It's a ridiculous movie, but it's a hell of a lot of fun.
This almost snuck on my list because, like, the more, I don't know how great it is, but, like, I would watch it anytime because you're like, wait. Here's the plot. Harrison Ford kills Harris on a plane? Yes.
I'm in. I mean, literally, I will tell you, no, the movie is not necessarily great as someone that literally just watched it. Will I watch it any time that it's just on TV?
Yes. Yes.
Abso-fucking-lutely.
I mean,
like you said, it is Harrison Ford on a plane killing terrorists.
And, dude, Gary Oldman is absolutely slaying in this movie, which is great. Dude, the CGI is bad, but the landing scene is fucking awesome, dude.
Yep.
And one thing I really like about this movie also is while Harrison Ford is a badass, he's still, once again, he's Harrison Ford. So he's like old in every role. So even though he's a badass, like the fight scenes are very like messy. You know what I mean? He's not like spinning wheel kicking people in the face. He's just like throwing his body at them and just like sheer willing them to death. It's pretty solid.
Also has maybe my favorite Harrison Ford line.
Ooh, go ahead.
Get off my plane.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah, get off my plane. Of course.
Oh, just too good. And directed by Wolfgang Petersen. Sadly passed away in 2022. Rest in peace.
What are the other Wolfgang Petersen films besides Troy?
Besides Troy, he did Neverending Story.
Yeah, right, of course.
He did Outbreak, Perfect Storm.
Oh, yeah.
A few good ones in there. But yeah, man, Air Force One, if somehow you haven't seen it, if at all you like action movies or just, you know, again, I do think, Mike, that I'm not trying to relate the quality, but if you like a movie like Die Hard, I don't think you can have a bad time watching a movie like Air Force One.
I mean, as you said, it's Die Hard on a plane. I mean, that's when you pitch this film, you just say it's Die Hard on the plane.
Yeah.
Sorry, Harrison Ford. And the green light.
There you go. It's done. So that's number three for me.
Okay. All right. My number two, I'm in a very, very similar vein. And this is the closest Harrison Ford 90s blockbuster that almost made my 90s blockbuster list. It's on the short list. Didn't quite make it. But that is 1993's The Fugitive.
There we go.
I also, like, just in case you haven't seen U.S. Marshals, please don't watch it. I don't understand what happened with that film. Like, I don't know why they made like a spinoff of this film. It's a weird situation because The Fugitive fucking kicks ass and that movie doesn't. So The Fugitive, Harrison Ford, he's a doctor, again, a medical doctor. And he like comes home and his wife has been attacked and he like fights the attacker and she dies. And then like no one believes that there was an attacker. So they take him to prison. Then the prisoners on his prison bus like tip the bus over and he breaks out and he's on the run. Tommy Lee Jones is leading the investigation against him. You've also got Cella Ward. You've got Joey friggin' Pants in this movie. Fantastic. Julianne Moore. Jane Lynch is mysteriously in it. It's pretty solid.
What a cast.
I know. So first you've got like, he's on the run, you know, very similar to like a Shooter, you know, like my favorite film of all time, where he's like, you know, stealing clothes from a truck and he's like doing that kind of thing, right? And then he's got to solve the mystery. So he like goes to a hospital and like tries to track this guy down, and he's in Chicago. You know, I love that.
Yep.
There's a great score. And then eventually at the end, he's got to do like his action thing and sort of save the day. And it all is just kind of standard in a sense, like blockbuster fare, but at the same time, it's pretty fucking entertaining all throughout the 130-minute runtime. Can't fault it really in any way. Not that it's not without faults, but like, you know what you're getting.
No, but it's a pretty fucking great movie. And I honestly, another one that just missed my list, but I think one of his most classic, if I had to kind of think of them, like when people think of Harrison Ford, obviously there's a couple right at the top from the franchises that people think of. But then I'd say Fugitive is right in that next class.
Well, it was nominated for Best Picture, and it was the third highest grossing film of the year, God, domestically.
Damn. So honestly, it was
a pretty
huge.
Big movie. Yeah.
Again, if you guys like action movies, Fugitive is a bit more quality than Air Force One, we'll say.
Yes, but they both definitely have their merits.
Yes. Yes. But number two, The Fugitive.
What do you got?
All right. Here's maybe the point where we can start to have some nice arguments. Number two. So, you know, the way I was introduced to Harrison Ford was through a couple small roles. And one of those just had to be my number two. Funny enough, for me, this is personally my least favorite movie of this trilogy. But I think that Harrison is so iconic in it that I have to put it because I think it has my favorite scenes of his. And that is Star Wars Episode IV, A New Hope from 1977.
Okay. All right.
So Star Wars, I'm personally a big fan of Star Wars, the whole saga, the OG trilogy. I'm someone that actually likes New Hope the least, although I think they're all great. New Hope for me over the years has maybe held up the least, if that makes sense. I think like certain parts are a little bit corny, whatever. I still love it. But just the introduction of Harrison Ford as Han Solo, to me, one of the most, you know, iconic characters in film history. It's just so good from the first time that you meet him at the cantina to like, oh my God, I'm trying to think of all the moments in this movie because I know almost everyone here. I don't need to explain Star Wars, or I hope not.
No, please don't.
No, I'll spare you. All I'll say for everyone is obviously you have Mark Hamill as Luke Skywalker, Carrie Fisher, rest in peace, Princess Leia. And then of course our main man, Harrison Ford is the coolest guy in the galaxy is Han Solo. So, yeah, I'd say at the end of the day, I didn't want to include multiple movies from any franchise on this list. And I went with New Hope because in Empire, I think he also has some really fucking cool scenes. But he also gets frozen into Jabba the Hutt's block of whatever.
I and believe then, it's carbonite. Is that correct?
That is correct. See, you know more than me.
Like carbonite.
Look at you. $400. Carbonite, totally real thing. And then Return of the Jedi, I actually think he has some awesome. Again, I think he's great in all the movies. New Hope is really memorable. It's the first time you meet him. Had to be on my list. Had to be high up there. Han Solo, Star Wars Episode IV, New Hope. That's my number two.
Yeah, I mean, had to be on here. I don't have any problem with it. I don't. The Star Wars movies in general, I think, like, I've seen the first three, or you know what I mean, episodes 4 through 6 several times. I saw them when they got re-released in theaters in, was that the late 90s? Anyway.
Yes.
And I saw the episode 1 when it came out as well. And then I just kind of grew out of it. But I never had any problem with the movies. And obviously, Harrison Ford has given us Bill Pullman as Lone Star in Spaceballs. So that's really all that I really need to say. I mean, if this movie didn't exist, you don't have it. So yeah, I'm fine with this. No problems.
Okay. Okay. We'll get into the problems maybe with number one, but we're going to start with your number one.
Okay. We're here. My number one. What a fucking film this is. I love this movie so much. Really a no doubt number one for me. An absolute gem. 1990, Presumed Innocent.
Mike, I need you to know. I'm going to take a screenshot and send it to you so you know this is real. On my list of the ones I didn't get to, there's only one movie with even more exclamation points than Frantic, and that is Presumed Innocent.
That's Presumed Innocent. Well, there damn well should be. There damn well should be.
They're the only two with exclamation points. So, goddamn, take it away. Tell us about Presumed Innocent.
Presumed Innocent, directed by Alan J. Pakula, who's done Parallax View, All the President's Men, later did Pelican Brief. So this is like a courtroom drama, but this guy knows his way around like a political thriller. So the setup here is that Harrison Ford is like a, he kind of works for like the district attorney or state prosecutor or something like that. And one of the other people in his office gets murdered and he was having an affair with her. But anyway, it's like, you know, imperative that they solve this murder right away because it looks bad entering an election for like the real district attorney, his boss, played by Brian Dennehy, born in Bridgeport, Connecticut, 203.
Wow. Shout out.
And very quickly, like, it becomes clear that we find out about the affair. We also find out that she was having like an affair with a bunch of other people and she was kind of sort of sleeping her way to the top. Then Harrison Ford gets like pinned for the crime. This is all pretty early on. And he has now, instead of investigating the crime, he has to like prove his innocence. So he has got as his lawyer, Raul Julia, absolutely incredible, looking like Gomez, as you do. Incredible. His wife, Bonnie Bedelia, who's like the wife in Die Hard. Amazing. And then the secret weapon to this movie is that like he's been closely working with like the lead detective on the case. Because he's going to be like the prosecuting attorney or whatever. And that's played by John Spencer, who is fucking amazing. And if people don't know who John Spencer is, he's Leo from The West Wing. And he absolutely slays in this movie.
Leo is such a fucking boss in
exactly.
West Wing.
Exactly. And this is just like, it's also like at that time where it's playing on some of these like erotic thrillers in this movie. There's like a lot of sex, but it's like power and money and corruption. And then it becomes this legal thriller. And there's just so many interesting like dimensions and relationships in the movie that keep getting like, it's so well balanced that you never really know where it's going to go. And then the last 5 minutes, you're already like on such a high, and the last 5 minutes delivers you just that sweet twist that you just will never forget. It's just fucking delightful.
Oh, this is the one that I am probably going to watch tonight.
Please text me when you're done watching it, because it's so fucking amazing.
I will. And I'll tell all you listening about it next time that we're on here.
Okay, here we go.
I know everyone that Mike has a problem with this film series. And you know what? There's just no way that a list of Harrison Ford films could not include one. And for me, not include one at the very, very top of the list. When you think Harrison Ford, for me, I think Indiana Jones. And that's why my number one, maybe not the popular pick out of the series, but my favorite, 1984's Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
It's better than Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Okay. That's, you know what? That's more than I could have ever asked for.
Yeah.
Harrison Ford, obviously, is Indiana Jones. At this point, in recent years, of course, with some of their reunions, it's now been incredible, of course, to see where K. Hugh Kwan, where his career has gone. And he's in this as Short Round, who honestly is the reason that one of the reasons I love this movie so much. I feel like I watched it as a kid, and having him in there kind of as like Indy's sidekick to a degree in the movie, it's just such an epic pairing I just, it was so fun back then. It's still so fun now. I'll never forget from growing up the scene, of course, where the guy in the temple, you know, he grabs the heart out and lifts it up. Obviously, when they're running across like the suspending bridge, there's so many cool action set pieces in this. I think the chemistry is great between Indy and Short Round. I love the movie. I think it's just a classic adventure film. I think Indiana Jones is a great character in general. And unlike you, Mike, I think Raiders is great. I just rewatched it. I think Last Crusade's great. I don't think 4 is as good, but I'm very excited for 5. And to get one more spin with Harrison as Indy. And I think he would say it's probably the character he's the most proud of. And I understand that.
Okay. I think what I have to say about this film is beyond fair. Like, I know when people aren't agree with most of my takes, but I really think that this is an acceptable thing to say, and it just bothers people to different degrees.
Okay.
So after like an hour, this film is pretty fun. I think it really finds itself there. And then I don't really have much of an issue with that whole second half of the movie. But the first hour is like, I don't really get it. It's just like, here's xenophobia on a plate. Isn't this funny? Like, it isn't funny. Like, I get that things age terribly, and I'm not trying to be like the police and saying we should like cancel the movie, but I've just never found it good. They're just like, well, look at these brown people. They eat weird stuff, right? Ha ha ha. Like, it just doesn't work for me, you know? It just doesn't work for me. But then, yeah, once it gets on the adventure part, you're like, yeah, this works. And I think Last Crusade is my favorite. So like, really from that whole time, like, I'm totally happy with the original sort of back end of the trilogy. I don't even really remember the one that came out in, what was that, 2008?
It was somewhere right around.
Anyway,
there.
Like, I saw that, but I don't really remember much of it. And I'm still going to see the fifth
Kingdom
one.
Of the Crystal like, Skull. You were right on 2008.
Like, I think the first one's by far the worst, and it's like borderline unwatchable. But like, yeah, this one's okay. It's just not it's not perfect for me, especially the first half.
Okay, that's fair. Also, we do have to shout out about Kingdom of the Crystal Skull. They did shoot a lot of the movie in New Haven, Connecticut, the CT-203.
Isn't like Shia LaBeouf in that movie?
Shia LaBeouf's in it, Cate Blanchett.
Yeah, okay.
It's, you know, it's okay.
It's I've seen the other ones like, I don't know, 3 or 4 times each, and I saw that one once, and that's it. But I've got to rewatch it before I go see the fifth one, obviously. So
yes, and I'm hoping the fifth one's good. But hey, that brings us full circle back to the beginning of the ep, talking about Dial of Destiny coming out. Mm. That's our top fives. Shall we recap? Want to give me yours, 5-1?
Sure. 5 is The Mosquito Coast. 4 is Patriot Games. 3 is Frantic. 2 is The Fugitive. And 1 is Presumed Innocent.
And mine is 5, Working Girl. 4, What Lies Beneath. 3, Air Force One. 2, Star Wars Episode 4, A New Hope. And 1, Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. Dude, no overlaps.
No, but like, you had 3 of my next like 5 or 6.
And likewise with Patriot Games and Fugitive on your end. And it sounds like Frantic and Presumed Innocent could have even made my list if I'd actually watched them.
Like, I can't wait for you to do it.
I can't wait either. God damn. Is there anything we wanna shout out before we take off for this time? Anything you've seen lately that really stoked a flame inside of you?
Did you see Asteroid City yet?
I did not. It's next on my list. I'm seeing it this week.
Okay, cool.
Did you like it?
That's good. I think it's kind of similar to the, what was the last one we called? French Dispatch. Like, yep. Similar maybe level. I'm trying to think of other, what I haven't seen. A lot of the big stuff that's come out is what's like Flash or Spider-Man or...
I saw Spider-Man, which I really, really liked. I think that these Spider-Verse films are maybe the best Spider-Man content that they've put out that I've ever seen. It's really creative, really interesting the way they do the animation on top of it. And the scripts are good. They're really good movies.
Did you see Transformers?
I did not. Did you?
I did. I also didn't think that was very good. Not that I was surprised.
I'm not surprised there. Did you get Past Lives yet?
Not in the cinema. I don't know if it's somewhere, but no, we haven't.
Okay. Well, that one I'll say that's going to be thus far. I know we're only in June. That's my winner for the year at the moment. So
okay.
Big recommendation from me for anyone that hasn't seen Past Lives. It's first time director Celine Song. Wow. I mean, unbelievable. Korean film. Greta Lee plays the lead, who you might recognize from some other stuff. She's been in, she actually is in, as a voice, obviously, in Across the Spider-Verse, but she's been in Russian Doll, Morning Show. You'd recognize her. She's been in quite a few things, but it is just, fuck, man. I'm not going to go into it, but I'm just going to say it's one of those movies that sticks with you, and I don't think anyone that watches it can get it out of their head right away. And it has an impact on you. It really is it's a rare movie in this day and age, at least in my opinion. Everyone needs to see it. Required viewing this year, guys. If you have not, Past Lives.
I'll definitely have to check it out. Yeah.
Yeah. Can't wait to talk to you about it, honestly, once you've seen it. Speaking of a guest that we love having on every now and again, Dylan Finnerty, Finn called me yesterday and he's like, dude, I needed to call you because I saw Past Lives. He's like, holy fuck. So we had a big, big discussion. He also agrees. Thus far, it's the movie to beat.
Okay.
But I think that's about all I've got on my end at the moment.
Do you have Love Again?
Love Again?
Yeah.
Movie?
Yeah.
Typing it in right now. Dude, I don't know if we've had this here.
Largely features Celine Dion.
Wait, she's like acting in it?
Oh, yeah.
No. It says that it's going to be on Netflix September 2nd here.
I don't even want to say anything. I don't want to say anything.
Do I need to watch this movie?
I'm not telling you to watch it because it's like a 5-star film, but I'm telling you on September 2nd, I want you to text me that you've watched it.
Oh, my Netflix. God. Oh, my God. Okay. That's a deal.
I think that's a great way to close.
Yeah. Okay. Love Again. Guys, we love doing this. It's been so good to get back in the saddle and get a pod up out to you. We will do our best not to not to let it take as long to get the next one out there. And Mike and I are going to be in person together in just over a month. So you never know what could happen.
That is so exciting.
This has been epic. As usual, we'll let the one and only Zachary Wexelman, aka Real Topeka People, take y'all out of this. Everyone have a great summer. We'll see you soon. Peace. Top fives and deep dives, we're tired of PTM. Top fives and deep dives, we're tired of PTM. Top fives and deep dives, we're tired of PTM. Top fives and deep dives, we're tired of PTM.
My favorite director would have to be Martin Scorsese, followed by Quentin Tarantonius.
We're talking about showers, penises. I love it.